So coach class, this is where the student gets to reconnect with the teacher. Welcome back to Coach Class with me, Dom Birch. This is the podcast where I get to speak to inspirational leaders and coaches from across the world. And I'm absolutely delighted this week to welcome onto the Coach Class podcast, Jonathan Bowman Perks, MBE, no less. Jonathan is a global leadership coach to chairmen, CEOs, exec teams. He's a broadcaster, an entrepreneur, and also a team coach. And I had the fortune of actually sneaking into that list of chairman, CEOs and executive teams, even though I wasn't one of them, which is great. So, Jonathan, welcome to Coach Class.
Dom, it's a real pleasure and congratulations on your success. I love Coach Class. I'm a great avid follower of it. And it's lovely seeing such fascinating people and hearing their stories. So real privilege being with you.
So I normally start by asking people just to go back a little bit and I guess tell their story really and how you are where you are today. What brings you to where you are now?
Wow. Well, there's a long version and a short version. Short version, father was an inspirational leader himself, a hero actually, and a Royal Navy fast jet pilot. And at the age of 33, tragically, he was killed while saving the life of two other people. I could go into the detail of that, but I'll miss that one out. But the point was, suddenly my mother, age 33, was told, sorry, Mrs. Perks, you haven't got a home anymore. You're going to have to leave the Navy, and here's a tiny pension. And she had three small boys. So suddenly we were without the support. But I always had in the back of my mind, even though I was 2.5 years old, stories about my father and what he was like as a leader. And my mother was an inspirational leader. She was a Halifax lass. And grew up doing a lot of philanthropy. We'd often come back from church and there'd be a little old lady shuffling along the street and she'd be carrying all her life in two carrier bags, as the song goes. And mum would go, move over, let her in. Come on, where are you having lunch? She said, I'm not having lunch anywhere. I said, you are now. And she'd come and have lunch with us. And so that was the kind of two inspirational leaders that I had. Joined the army, got sick at sea, so I joined the army to become an army officer at Sandhurst and had a meteoric career, got outstanding results, but then got to be an instructor myself at Sandhurst and I was told I was average, bit of a crisis. Thought, goodness me, got to learn from the best. So I asked about my father and found people who knew him and learned from them. And the final point I'd say is one of the guys who had lunch with me said, Jonathan, your father bought my ticket. He died in my airplane, saving my life. You have a choice. You can be a victim, poor me, and that my life's always been a ruin because I never had a dad. I was too young. Or you can make your father your inspiration. And Dom, that's why I'm on the call with you now, to learn from inspiring leaders and pass on to people like yourself and others what I've learned on my journey.
Wow, what a story. And thank you for sharing it. And I know, you know, that's... That's a great summary, I guess, of what brings you to where you are. Now, we crossed paths when I was at ASDA, and I was fortunate to realise at the level I was at ASDA that I was entitled to ask for some coaching. And I went through that process. And of course, now that I'm training myself on barefoot to be a coach, it's really interesting sort of remembering back to, oh yeah, we had a chemistry session together. And that was where, you know, I decided which one of these, you know, great coaches on our list on the sort of schedule of ASDA coaches I could pick. And then we had a three-way triad conversation with myself and Chris McDonough and you at the time. And it's funny because I still remember some of the things that I said to you. I think I said to you on that call that I'm not commercial, something I must have had rattling around in my head at the time. I'm not a commercial person. And I remember you saying that to me or playing it back, reflecting it back to me, probably in our first or second session together. And you said, you've said that to me a number of times now, Dom. If I were to tell you that I'm stupid, you'd believe me if I told you enough times. And it was one of the first times I just started to think, the language that I choose to describe myself to others is informing how they choose then to view me. And it was that was probably one of the first doinks I had when we were together.
It's so interesting you say that because, as you know from your study, words create worlds from neuro-linguistic programming. So how you describe yourself, whether you think you can or you think you can't, Henry Ford said, you're probably right. And the reason why I said to you way back then, I'm stupid, is because for many years, having been told by a Halifax teacher aged 7 that I was thick and going to become a dustman because I couldn't spell, I couldn't do my maths. I didn't know at the time I was dyslexic, and I struggled for ages thinking I was stupid. But then I had the dyslexia test in the Dyslexia Institute and found that I was. And I go, oh, people have been saying you're really clever. And I go, no, I'm stupid. And you were doing that to me. You're going, I'm not commercial. I was going, I think you're really smart and you're really commercial, Dom. So change your view. So it's what's called untrue limiting assumptions that we live as if they're true. And so if you have a child or you have a colleague who said, you know, I can't do that, Dad. And I'd say to you, Dom, you know, I can't do that, Dad. And you go, okay. And if you could do it, how would you do it? And instantly they say, I'll do it this way. You go, okay, fine. So it's a positive alternative assumption, but it's all assumptions. So we make too many assumptions, don't you reckon, Dom?
Yeah, and it's really stuck with me. And it's funny because the other thing that I guess we did quite a lot of was we changed the environment, didn't we? So we would meet in your apartment. We'd go up to the roof sometimes, and you'd get the ladder out, and we'd stand there looking out over kind of Barbican and seeing, you know, St. Paul's or wherever, you know, around London. And I remember one time it was kind of like, right, just imagine you're one of those cranes. Where do you want to pick yourself up and put yourself down to? And anyway, so we use all these different techniques that really helped me explore, I guess, the kind of things that I wanted to think about and the relationships between different people, whether that was work or personal. And just, I remember just each time I'd leave those sort of 2-hour sessions together and the train journey back up to Leeds, I'd be like, I don't know, my brain would just be whirring. And I guess the real work then was happening in between the sessions, wasn't it? Where I was able to go away and think about it, reappraise, and start to really adapt and learn and change and figure out what it was I wanted to do in this world.
Yeah, you're so right, Dom. And we have to, and I'm constantly learning all the time. I always keep putting myself on different courses and learning different things. My next one, I've made friends with a guy called Unleash Your Humble Alpha. And at some stage, I'm going to go to Peru and do some sort of Amazonian-based medicines and things like that. Think about the future and stuff. It's quite fun. But there's always things to learn. But I think it's between those sessions, we have to unlearn what we held to be the truth. There's a lovely book by Adam Grant called Think Again. To have to unlearn what we've learned and then relearn new things. Because until we can let go of the often fake news or information, you know, everybody's entitled to their own opinions, but they're not entitled to their own facts. And we have to unlearn stuff to then be open to learn more and to be prepared to be wrong, Dom, because I'm frequently wrong. Every day I get things wrong. But when you ask one of your clients, Dom, when was the last time you were dead wrong? You personally were dead wrong. If they say, as one arrogant CEO said to me, do you know what? Maybe it was 1978 or possibly 84, but I really can't think what it was I did wrong. You go, that's the problem, because how quickly do you realize you're wrong and how quickly did you address it, rectify it?
Mm. I mean, I think deeply about this stuff now, as you can imagine. But also, you were one of the first people, one of the first proponents within the Asda culture to bring to us this idea of Nancy Klein time to think and that interrupting people, that gate crashing their best thinking, that kind of bullying style that was quite prevalent actually in parts of corporate culture. And I can think of particular individuals in Asda at the time who used that as a tactic, as a way to make people feel a bit stupid in the moment. It was that fight or flight sense, wasn't it? It's like, I'm going to put you on the spot now. I'm going to fire a question at you and I'm almost going to ridicule you in front of people. Ah, you are stupid. That was just really, really powerful at the time. That, I mean, that must have been interesting for you coming into an organization that was quite competitive retail and holding the mirror up to the organization culturally and saying, you're not doing this right. There's another way.
Yeah. You're so right. I was talking to a fascinating guy who I'm interviewing shortly, Harry Matuvu QC from Brick Lane, who's trying to fight for young black interns and to get people into work in a community that's still very biased against them. And I said to him, Harry, I've just last week finished a grueling 2-day final court hearing. Luckily I won, but it was just, I said, it was everything other than the thinking environment. There was no psychological safety. They shouted over me. The other barrister belittled me, demeaned me. It's almost like coercive control in action that now is against the law in 2015. The whole legal system is set up to utterly slog each other to death. And I said, there's got to be a better way. I said, it reminded me of my resistance to interrogation training that I did as a prone to capture spy working for GCHQ against the Russians. And they broke people down. And this is what the law system is designed. And I said, we didn't get that. When people get tortured, this is the reason we stopped torture in the British Army. You don't get the right answers from them. You just get any answers from them. And I think we've got to have this environment where people think independently well for themselves. Nancy Klein's book, the latest one, is The Promise That Changes Everything. I Won't Interrupt You. Superb book. That you want people to not have their thinking assaulted. And what was going on, as you said, there was bullying and there was assaulting, verbal bullying and assaulting, just like in a courtroom when a barrister takes you on and tries to destroy you.
I love the use of language sometimes. And by using violent, you know, words like assault, really helped me stopped what was driving my interruption. My interruption was excitement, was a creative brain, was, you know, a bit of giddiness. But actually how it was being received by others then was, you've interrupted me, you're not listening. You've taken my idea and you've stolen it. You've reinterpreted what I was about to say and you've got in there first, right? All those sorts of things. And once I realized that assault was something that was never my intent, right? I don't want somebody to feel assaulted by me. It started to shift how I approached being in the room with people. And then, of course, you start to observe the magic, a bit like in a coaching session. The alchemy is the bit in the middle, isn't it, where you just give somebody a little bit more room. And I will never forget, I remember, I don't know whether it was like session two or three, and I sat there looking at you and you'd ask me, well, what else do you think, Dom, or whatever? And I must have, and my brain was going, well, I've said what I wanted to say. It's your turn. It's your turn to talk. Why aren't you doing the work? But once that penny had dropped, that's when I really started to accelerate in my own development in our sessions, where I embraced that concept that my best thinking needs to be verbalized. And sometimes I don't know it until I say it.
Yeah, yeah. Many people, extroverts, speak in order to think. Introverts think in order to speak. But actually, the thinking environment helps introverts to have the space and the time to get lucky and not be interrupted, particularly if you have a round where everybody has their own turn and they can't assault the other's thinking and speak over them and to have equal turns. But I think what you've talked about was that lovely paradox of intent versus impact, that psychologically we judge ourselves by our intentions and never by our impact because we're hypocrites. And we judge everybody else by their impact on us and never by their intentions. So find out what their intention is behind the question or behind what they've done before you start to judge them about doing the wrong thing. So you've hit on a really sweet spot there, Dom.
It's funny, what Claire, who is on our course, she's, you know, training and development at Coutts Bank. And one of the things that they've really brought in is this book by Pete Lindsay and Mark Borden, Pig Wrestling. And it's one of those, it's a parable, you know, you can read it in an hour or so. It took me a little bit longer just sort of read it. But what was interesting for me was just that idea, that concept that, do you jump straight into the pen and wrestle this pig before you've cleaned the problem, is how they describe it. But really, are you addressing the right thing? And I think about that a lot in team environments. People are showing up and presenting with lots of anxiety or concerns or anger or frustration. And the thing that they're verbalizing is the easiest way for them to communicate that frustration. If you then try and tackle that thing, are you really getting to the root? Are you really getting to what's really going on? And even just been able to ask that question, what's really going on here? And allowing somebody to go, well, it's this, but it's also that. And actually, now I've said it that way, that's what's going on.
That is so interesting, Dom. I've just written that down. What's really going on here? There is a part of the thinking environment which is called time to think dialogue. So let's imagine, Dom, someone who you're working with in the old days in ASDA would come to you and say, Dom, what should I do about this? Now, the Dom superstar, Superman, would rip open his outer shirt. Under there was the Superman T-shirt, and he'd go, right, Claire, do this. And she'd go, thank you, Dom. And she'd run off. Then she'd come back and go, Dom, what should I do now? Oh, do this. And that's the sort of directive style of leadership, which still goes on very widely. But, of course, the time to think dialogue is, Dom, what should I do about this? You go, Okay, Claire, let's go dialogue, 2 minutes each way. And I'll ask you back your own question because the mind thinks best in the presence of a question. So, Claire, what do you think you should do about this? You've got a whole 2 minutes and I promise not to interrupt you. And she goes, well, no, really. But it turns out Claire's been thinking about this problem for about 6 weeks. You've had 6 seconds. So let her have her 2 minutes. Then she stops herself. She goes, so, Dom, let me ask my question again to you. What's your freshest thinking, Dom, on what should I do about this? And you go, I think it's really good, Claire. What you said is this. That sounds great. What I've seen others do is this and this and this. What do you now think you should do about this question, Claire? So you've had your 2 minutes. She's got her 2 minutes. Freshest thinking, back and forth it goes. And then she goes, great, Dom, got that. Thanks, that was really useful. And off she goes. She's owned it. She's taken possession of it. And this is where the accountability must stay with the person who has the problem. The greatest leaders, Sun Tzu said 2,500 years ago, the greatest leaders, the people said, we did it ourselves.
I love that. There's one other thing that I do, really stays with me, and I think about it quite a lot, is when I was coming into our sessions, I was in awe of somebody who was training people or coaching people that were perceived to be much higher level than me. And I used to come in and I used to try and intellectually compete. And so you'd ask me a question and I'd be sort of second guessing what was the intent behind that question. And I'd sort of, you know, push back. And then you said to me one time, what if you assume, Dom, I already think you're clever? And it just helped me kind of just relax my shoulders a bit and go, why am I trying to justify my intelligence? This is about, this environment here, in fact, this safe environment is about me. So if I just lower that and just relax a little bit and maintain this degree of calm, now what comes to mind? And it's something I do. I mean, I write down the word calm quite often because I think the more calm I am in more situations, the less likely I am to trust my first instinctive behavioral response to a question or to a scenario or to how other people are behaving and really get under the, what else is going on here? It's something that really, you know, I think that powerful question to me, what if I assume you think that I'm clever already? I don't have to prove it to you each time I walk through the door.
It's so lovely, and a few thoughts come from that. The first one is, if you worry what people think about you, you'd be surprised how little they do. They're just thinking about themselves. They're not thinking about you. The second one was when I did my airborne training, I worked with a US Navy SEAL, and he said, we have a motto in the US Navy SEALs, and that is that calm is contagious. So always remember that you're going to have an impact on people. Make sure it's the one you want it to be. And the other one is about the loose seat. Just remember, everybody sits the same way as you in a loose seat. There's nothing special about the other people. And that everybody you meet has something to teach you if only you'd listen. And I found in our sessions, it's interesting you've taken me back to them, that actually when you came in, you created a sort of whirlwind of activity and stuff going. And I found it quite exhausting. And I was going, I'm almost feeling like I have to compete with Dom. And I go, it's not a battle. It's all about Dom realizing he's already good enough. So I don't know. A lot of things have come from that comment, Dom. Thank you.
It's funny, that good enough, funny enough. I wrote that on a post-it note the other day when we were exploring beliefs and starting to do some NLP work. And the post-it note that I arrived at, having like flung a few over my shoulder, was, I'm good enough already or something, and I stuck it to my forehead when I was being coached. Really interesting. That I think that's sometimes you just have to relearn the same lessons in life, don't you? You know, there's certain things that just come back up for you, and when you lose sight of them, that's when you kind of get into those places. The other thing that stuck with me was at the end of each session, it's a bit un-British, right? And so it felt a little bit awkward, was that we'd go through this process of saying, right, I'm going to appreciate something about you. I am, you know, in this moment, I'm going to pay you effectively a compliment based on something that I've observed that has been useful, you know, whatever, to me. And I remember the first couple of times, and I think John Buxton, who I've ended up working with since, had sort of said to me, watch out, because at the end you have to say something nice about each other, you know. But you know, when we've been doing a little bit of this on Barefoot recently, it's very rare, actually, isn't it, that in those sessions together that you allow each other just to go, this something that I recognize about you.
Yeah. And it's so fascinating. I still do it to this day. And I've been coaching probably, I don't know, 15 years, maybe longer, 20, that I say, let's just end this session. We've never met before. We've been chatting for an hour, appreciating one quality about each other. Do you want to go first or shall I go first and demonstrate? Oh, no. What's this? You go first. Okay. I've got to be specific, sincere, and succinct, the three S's. So this is what I've appreciated about you in the short time we've met. And if you want to, would you like to appreciate something about me? I would find that helpful to get some feedback. And it's not British, but the ratio normally is 5-1 of criticism to any kind of anything nice. But normally it's criticism, judgment, the things you've got to change. And rarely do you get from anybody a quality you appreciate about them. And it lifts them. And it's like HIIT training in the gym. And I'm a big believer in HIIT training. You only need 30 minutes of it because the whole system is burning in you for about another hour afterwards. So it's the same with appreciation. It lifts people for a long time afterwards.
Well, we're going to have to more or less leave it there. But I just want to say I do appreciate you, Jonathan. I appreciate your candor. I really appreciate your generosity of spirit. And I also appreciate your expert storytelling because you have the power of telling a story that will resonate and live. And it will also become contagious because I tell the stories that I learn together with you. I onward tell those stories and they've become, you know, parables in many people's sessions that I've had. I might not have called them coaching sessions, but people I've managed, people I've spoke to afterwards. So I just want to say that out loud. I really appreciate your generosity and thank you for coming on to Coach Class and continuing to be an inspiration.
Well, Dom, I won't let you go until I appreciate you back. And my appreciation is congratulations on doing Coach Class. And also, I appreciate in you the quality of your energy and your intelligence that I just love the buzz that we've had. So thank you very much.
Jonathan, absolute pleasure. Can't wait to stay in touch. I'm sure we'll be speaking lots and lots more in the future. But for now, thank you for coming on to Coach Class.
Thanks, Dom.